Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Keisha Blair, wife, mother of three, author of Holistic Wealth, and founder of the Institute on Holistic Wealth. The show will showcase various experts in the key pillars of holistic wealth. Each week, we deliver the best information on how to become holistically wealthy and live your best life. Today, I have a very special guest with me. I have Javasia Harris Bowser, and Javasia is an entrepreneur, freelance writer. She's a blogger, and she has written for various national media outlets, including Birmingham Magazine, Good Grit Magazine, and USA Today. She is the founder of C. Jane Wright, and she's been doing lots of great things with her community on writing, freelance writing, and she's also a breast cancer survivor. Javasia, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, great. So I love for you to share your story. There's so many things that just really stood out for me with your personal story. You know, both of us have endured setbacks. You've made transitions, you know, you were in teaching and then went to freelance writing. I'd love to hear about your journey with that and kind of how you got started.
So as you mentioned, I was a teacher for 10 years. And then in 2019, I left the classroom to do writing full time. And it wasn't really a new career because it was really going back to what I did before I was teaching. So before I was teaching, I was a staff reporter for a weekly newspaper in Louisville, Kentucky. And so I did that for several years. And then I went to teaching. And while I was teaching, I was freelancing on the side. So I was freelancing for several different publications on the side. And I also had started C. Jane Wright, which is a website and community for women who write and blog. So I was really juggling sort of three careers, really, with writing, the freelance writing, with teaching and leading C. Jane Wright. And it really just got to be too much. And I had to choose. And it was very difficult choosing because I loved teaching. I loved being in the classroom. But I realized that I could still teach in a way through C. Jane Wright, because basically through C. Jane Wright, I teach other women how to start a writing career. And so I could still teach through that. Obviously, I miss my students, but I still get to teach through C. Jane Wright. And then, of course, writing has just always been a love of mine. It's my first love, I always say. In addition to freelance journalism, I also write essays. I used to write poetry, not as much now, but I do write a lot of essays. In fact, I have a essay collection coming out in January of next year. So yeah, the transition was hard just because I loved everything I did, but I had to do it because it was just getting to be too much.
Okay. No, sounds reasonable. And for sure, that sounds like a lot. And so in terms of the transition, let's say there's, you know, audience members listening in and they want to know how to transition well into freelance writing. Are there any tips that you could share for them based on your experience working with your clients on, you know, how to start and get the foot in the door, especially with COVID-19? I feel like so many people have lost jobs, mm-hmm. you know, and are looking for other things that they could do to earn an income. So I'm just wondering if you have any advice on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say if you do want to make that transition and do this full time, don't just quit.
Yeah. You
know, have a plan, get prepared. Right. And in that preparation, figure out what kind of writing you want to do. There's so many different ways to make money as a writer. You can be a technical writer. You can do freelancing for companies and organizations where you write content for their website or their promo copy or their newsletter or whatever. Or you could do freelance journalism like I do. I do a little bit of both of those. So I do mostly freelance journalism, but I do some freelance writing for companies as well. Figure out how you want to make money as a writer. You could be a ghostwriter, you know, figure out what you want to do. And then start lining up side jobs while you still have your full-time job, right? So start lining them up, start making connections, building relationships. That's the most important thing, is building those relationships. And then once you feel like you have enough contact, reach out to them and let them know your plan. So before I quit, I reached out to a lot of the publications I was writing for, and I asked them, because I had already calculated exactly how many stories I needed per month to make the money I needed to make. And so I reached out to those publications and asked them, like, hey, do you think I could write X amount of stories for your publication per month? Mm-hmm. And so once everybody said yes, then I knew that it was safe for me to take that leap.
And that's a good plan, you know, that I think many people forget, is figuring out how much you need to make per month and then working backwards, right, with getting commitments. And that was amazing that you were able to get those commitments even before taking that leap, which I think is also important, because I think people do the opposite, which is, you know, like they take the leap and hope that those commitments come in. So that's also good. And so I'm guessing too, Javasia, that like with your diagnosis, when you got that breast cancer diagnosis, that this also helped in terms of having that flexibility that you needed, right? To be able to go for your treatments, do everything you needed to do. Can you tell us a bit about how that part of it worked out for you?
Yeah. So I went full-time freelance in the middle of 2019. And then in January of 2020, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Wow. And of course, I was angry. Yeah. Honestly, absolutely. I was more angry than scared. You know, most people are scared when they get that kind of diagnosis. I was just mad. because I was like, I am, you know, trying to enjoy my new life as a full-time freelancer, and now this happens.
Yeah.
But you're right, because of that flexibility with my schedule, it was so much easier to, you know, go to treatment and have surgery and all of that stuff. I can't imagine going through cancer treatment as a teacher. I mean, I know plenty of teachers do, but I can't imagine. I don't think I would have been able to do it.
Yeah.
So having that flexibility was very, very helpful. But I did worry initially about money, because I worried that I wouldn't have the strength to work. And when you're a freelancer, there are no sick days. Right. You know? So I was really worried about that. But a great story that I like to share is that 2020, even though that was my first full year as a full-time freelancer, even though that was the year I went through cancer treatment, and even though that was the year that the world was going through the pandemic, which we're still going through, in spite of all of that, I made more money in 2020 than I ever had before.
Wow.
So, yeah. And so, and a lot of people ask, well, how did you do that? I am a woman of faith, so I think God had a lot to do with it. But on the practical side of things, cancer treatment forced me to work smarter, not harder, as people say. Mm-hmm. Meaning that I had to be very strategic about getting jobs that paid well.
Yeah, yeah.
So that I didn't have to work so much.
Yeah.
And it worked.
That's amazing. And so it's amazing that you were able to just pivot and put that into, you know, to implement that right away, which is amazing. So there are two things, like, I honestly want to hear more about your story about, you know, when you got your diagnosis and how that, you know, how you were able to cope in terms health-wise. And then, of course, I want to come back to that point that you made just a while ago about implementing a strategy that worked, that allowed you to kind of bring in more, but work less. And of course, as a Black woman, like I've known other Black women with breast cancer. I have several aunts in my family, you know, on the maternal side who've been diagnosed. One passed away that was dear to me. It was almost like my mother, a second mom to me, fairly young too. And I just want to get your thoughts, like, can you walk us through your feelings, your process, how it unfolded for you? And you've come through it, and which is amazing, you know, and you're strong and you're able to inspire others. So I just wanted to hear about your story of overcoming it. What was it like going through treatment for you as a young woman in the prime of your life? And I know these things happen. My husband died when he was 34. I mean, I know how it is in the prime of your life to be like, okay, I'm just starting here. What's going on? So can you walk us through, you know, kind of what that was like, your treatments? Was it an aggressive form in when it was diagnosed, or was it, you know, like really early?
Right. So it was stage two. And, you know, it was crazy how it happened, because I was diagnosed at 38. And in the States, you typically aren't screened for breast cancer until 40. Some places don't screen you until 45.
Yep, like Canada,
But my primary care physician wanted me to get a mammogram early just to establish a baseline, because I do have family history. And honestly, I put it off because I was like, well, I'm not 40 yet. I don't know if I've done that. But then finally in January of 2020, I said, okay, let me go in and get this mammogram that she keeps bugging me about.
Right.
And so I go in for the mammogram and they're like, we need to do it again. And I was like, what? Why do you need to do it again? And so they do it again. And then they say, we need to do an ultrasound. And I'm like, okay, what's happening?
Yeah.
And so then they say, okay, you need to come back for a biopsy. So I came back for the biopsy. And then a few days later, they tell me I have cancer.
Oh my gosh, that's so fast.
So yeah, so it happened very fast.
Yeah.
And it came completely out of nowhere. Like, yeah. I had to go get that mammogram. It was just another thing to check off my to-do list, you know?
Yeah.
I had no idea that that mammogram was going to completely change my life. As I mentioned, when I first got diagnosed, I wasn't scared. I didn't cry. Like, my doctor came in with a big box of tissues for me.
Yeah.
I was crying. I was just like, okay, what we got to do?
Right.
You know? Like, I instantly just went into like fight mode. Like, okay, what do we have to do? And initially I was told that I was just going to need a lumpectomy and radiation.
Mm-hmm.
But after the lumpectomy, they saw that the tumor was more aggressive than they thought. And so they recommended that I have chemo. And so that changed a lot of things, because I initially wasn't going to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, I told my husband and my close family and a couple of friends, but I wasn't going to tell anybody else. But once I found out I was going to have chemo, I knew I was going to have to tell people, because even though the pandemic had us all at home, because of CJ and Wright, I'm very visible on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were going to see me. And people who know me well know that I, pre-chemo, I had extremely long, extremely thick hair.
Mm-hmm.
And so to go from that to no hair, people noticed that.
Right.
So, and I wasn't going to do a wig because I just don't have patience for it. So because of the chemo, I knew I was going to have to tell people. And so I, quote unquote, went public a few days before my first chemo treatment. And I'm so glad that I did, because one, the outpouring of support was just mind-blowing. My husband was actually talking about it the other day. He was like, remember the chemo days when there was a package on our front porch every single day? Like, people were sending me things every single day.
That's amazing.
To encourage me.
Yeah.
And so the outpouring of support was just amazing. But another reason I'm glad I went public, is my story was able to help so many other women. Yep. There were all of these other women who had gone through breast cancer or were currently going through it, and I didn't even know. And they started reaching out to me for help. And, you know, they had questions, and that continues even today. Like, I'm still able to give women encouragement and support. And so I'm just really glad that I did share my story, because it enabled me to help other women.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, from my experience with my family members and friends and other women, in particular Black women, you know, we always hear it always strikes us more aggressively, breast cancer. And I don't know if you've experienced that or heard of that, because you mentioned that it's also in your family. But, you know, and for Black women, like, we face particular challenges already, you know, in terms of the wage gap and the racial wealth gap. And there's all these gaps, right? And like barriers everywhere. And, you know, I'm in Canada, you're in the US, and it's pretty much the same, you know, with the barriers we face. So did you find, in terms of your health, or how, I mean, you know, how aggressive it was, that you heard from women that this was the case as well?
So most of the women that have talked to me, and some have been Black, some have been white, most of them I would say theirs is probably about the same as mine. But I will say this, once I got through treatment, mm-hmm. I then turned my attention to learning all I could about cancer. And that included doing advocacy work,
yeah,
particularly for women of color.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though white women and Black women get breast cancer around the same rate, Black women are more likely to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is usually the case because it's usually by the time it's found, like you were mentioning, by the time it's found in Black women, it's further along. It's
more. Mm-hmm.
And also Black women are typically not treated fairly. Now, I was really fortunate in that my medical team is outstanding. Just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And they listen to every word I say. They take everything I say seriously. They don't dismiss any complaint that I have. I mean, they're just phenomenal. And that was one of the things that actually made me want to get into advocacy work, because as I was going through treatment, I kept saying to everyone, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky. And then right. I was like, wait a minute. I shouldn't feel lucky.
Yeah.
This should be the norm.
Right.
Right. Like every Black woman, every person, period. But every Black woman should have this experience that I'm having.
Yeah.
I should not feel lucky. This should be the norm. And so I got involved with an organization called Tiger Lily Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of advocacy work for women of color related to breast cancer. So yeah, I've gotten really passionate about that, because not because I had a bad experience, but because
right.
I had a great experience, and every Black woman deserves that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's amazing. And I love that story, because you're right, we all deserve that. And so the second part of my question about really structuring, you know, in terms of the financial aspect, and really structuring your goals, like your financial goals, to allow you the time and the space to not have to put in more work and to focus on your health. I really loved the point you made about being very conscious about your rates and what you were charging and where you were writing, so that you could achieve those goals. And I'm certain, you know, that if audience members are listening in and, you know, going through a chronic illness, or going through, you know, any type of life transition like that, they're probably wondering, wow, how do I do that? Because that sounds like where I need to be. So if you could tell us a bit more about your experience with that and how you were able to do that, so that you could get the time, you know, that you needed, not to necessarily work harder, but to actually work a bit less, you know, and still earn what you needed. It would be great to hear your experience and tips and strategies for how you were able to do that.
Like I said, I do two types of freelance writing. I write for publications, and then I also write for businesses and nonprofits. And typically that writing for businesses and nonprofits, that pays better mm-hmm. than publications. But right. that is my love. Writing for publications is what I love to do the most. So that's why I continue to do it, even though it doesn't pay as well as freelancing for businesses and nonprofits. So what I had to do was I had to do more of the freelancing for businesses and nonprofits and less of the freelance journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the freelance journalism is what I love, you have to do way more of it.
Right.
To make the money that you need to make. And I just simply couldn't do that while I was going through treatment. So I had to do more of the freelancing for businesses and nonprofits. And I also was fortunate enough to get connected with new to me. So
yeah,
I started writing for this other publication that does pay well. And so that helped a lot too. And the publications that I write for that don't pay very well, but I write for them because I love the publication or I love the editor. You know, I just had to take a break from those and until I got through treatment. And then I signed back on.
Yeah, no. And as you were talking, I was just thinking about one area of freelancing, you know, in terms of pitching, because I know that can also take a while when you're pitching like a new publication. And, you know, I guess in particular, those are most likely the, you know, like the journalistic type of freelancing. But did you have to do a lot of that? Or is it that you had those relationships that, you know, you could easily, let's say, do those projects and get that money coming in?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't do, and this is a terrible thing for a freelancer to say, but I don't do a lot of pitching at all.
Yeah.
Because I've built so many relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And so honestly, like I don't have time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because editors are always already coming to me with ideas. Now when I say I don't do a lot of pitching, I mean, I don't do a lot of cold pitching.
Right.
I do pitch to the editors that I already have relationships with, like, but it's not something that is very time consuming because since we already have a relationship, I don't really have to go through this really formal, drawn out pitch. I can just send two sentences that are like, hey, I want to write about blah, blah, blah. What do you think? And they're like, yeah, cool. Do that.
Yeah. You know?
So yeah, I don't do a lot of cold pitching and I want to, because I want, there are other publications that I want to write for.
Yeah.
But honestly, I just don't have time
because
I have all of these other stories and assignments that I have to do.
Yeah, no, and that's amazing. And so, Javasia, like, I know you took the quiz, and I ask all my guests, you know, this at the end, kind of towards the end of the interview, about the personal financial identities quiz that I developed, because in my book, Holistic Wealth, I'd spoken about everyone kind of having a sense of what their personal financial identity is. And so many female entrepreneurs have come on the podcast. They've shared their results and insights that they have in terms of how it's influenced their financial philosophy, whether it's spending or investing or saving or, you know, shopping, whatever it is in their lifestyle in general, or even with, you know, their spouse. But can you share with us your quiz results and kind of any thoughts you have on that?
The anxious spender, which didn't surprise me at all.
Really? That's
because
great.
I have all kinds of anxiety about money.
Yeah, yeah. So, my mom's an anxious spender, so I'm like eager to hear about this, about
her. So yeah, like I spend money, but I'm always nervous about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm always like, should I really do that? And and I've had a horrible relationship with money most of my life. I didn't grow up with a lot of money, and that lack of money caused a lot of tension in my family. And so I always just associated money with disagreements I always had this sort of sense of lack.
Yes.
And it's taking a long time, and I say taking because it's still in progress, to get out of that. Honestly, my husband has helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He has a much healthier relationship with money, even though he's very, very frugal.
Right.
He doesn't like when I call him stingy or cheap. He's very frugal, but he's the person who got me comfortable with talking about money, because I used to not even like to talk about money. like when we first got married and he wanted to sit down and talk about the budget and
right.
saving and all that stuff. I was like, ah, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, for sure.
So he's helped me with that a lot. And yeah, but it's still a work in progress. I just have a lot of anxiety when it comes to money.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I completely get that because I, you know, apart from the other anxious spenders that I've interviewed on the podcast, my, as I said before, my mom's an anxious spender. And so I completely, because she's like that too. And, you know, like with her family story, like she had epilepsy at like maybe 9 years old to maybe 14 for 5 years. And her family had to spend all their money on her. So she grew up feeling guilty and really anxious, you know, seeing her parents basically almost go into, you know, into debt to have her treated for her epilepsy. So, and I spoke about that a bit in my book, Holistic Wealth, which is kind of what spurred me on to try to talk about this more and to try to open up conversations about it. And of course, for me, after my husband died, you know, I got pretty anxious too around money, because then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a single mom with two kids now. Where do I go from here? So it's a topic pretty near and dear to my heart. So and I get the most insights from guests on this podcast on this topic, I think, more than any other topic that I have. So Javicia, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. It's an amazing story, and I'm sure your advocacy work is going to inspire so many people. Can you tell us where to find you, like the audience on social media, your website, if they want to do your program, you know, how they can sign up?
Yeah. So if you go to cjanewright.net, that is my website. And as far as social media, I'm always on Instagram. So that's Javicia Wright. And if you are interested in getting connected with the CJ Wright community, we have a Facebook group that's open to everyone. It's called the CJ Wright Network. And yeah, the collective, which is our paid membership program, once it reopens, if you follow me on social, you'll know when that reopens so that you can join the collective as well.
Okay, perfect. Thank you once again, Javicia, for being here. It was amazing hearing your story, and I'm inspired by it. I'm sure so many people will be inspired by your story. So thank you so much.
Thank you again for having me.
Thank you for joining us this week on Holistic Wealth with Keisha Blair. Make sure to visit our website, keishablair.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Are you a member of the Institute on Holistic Wealth? If not, what are you waiting for? Go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth.com/memberships to choose your membership plan and join. As a member, you get so many perks. Free worksheets, advice, coaching, and a member's workshop to design an intentionally designed life. You need to figure out your life purpose? Take the Build Your Life Purpose Portfolio online self-paced course. You're struggling with all your money decisions? Take the free financial identities quiz and then take the course. You recently had a breakup, job loss, or experienced the death of a loved one? Take the holistic healing course. You need an overall plan to achieve holistic wealth? We will help you figure out your holistic wealth blueprint. And of course, if you want to start making money by helping others achieve holistic wealth, become a certified holistic wealth consultant. Regardless of what career you've got, the Institute will show you how to increase your income and walk in your purpose. The sooner you join, the sooner you start to achieve a more holistically wealthy lifestyle. And you're going to want to stay for a very long time. So go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth.com/memberships to join. If you haven't read the book yet, pick up a copy of the award-winning, best-selling Holistic Wealth 32 Life Lessons to help you find purpose, prosperity, and happiness.